Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Sivan Samir. Sivan is the Vice President, Enterprise Innovation and Venture with Xylem. Sivan, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Christian. Thank you for inviting me. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Let's start with Xylem. What's the firm's investment thesis?
So Xylem is a Fortune 500 company. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C., but we've really got global operations in over 150 countries. The company itself is the largest water technology and solutions provider in the world. And so what does that mean? People usually think that I'm talking about desalination automatically, or sometimes they think about, you know, they ask me, do you work for the Brita filter company? Those are the two kind of references they have when they think about water. But we develop out the technology and put the services in place, anything from drawing water from its natural source, whether it's underground, underground water in a reservoir from the ocean. We take that water, we convey it with pumps, and then we treat it with chemical and biological treatment processes, and then we bring it to its end user or customer. So not inside your house, not thinking about, you know, the faucet when you turn on, your kitchen sink, but rather all kinds of industrial users, from food and beverage to semiconductor to chemical refinery, oil and gas, to commercial buildings, to agricultural users. So there's a really, you can't name a process that doesn't use water as a fundamental element of how, you know, business operations are conducted. So that's what the company does more broadly. In terms of our corporate innovation and venture work, I founded Xylem Innovation Labs, which is Xylem's corporate venture capital arm and corporate innovation arm that works with startups in the venture capital community. And we primarily focus on partnerships with entrepreneurs, with innovators, with startups, with universities. And we use venture capital as a tool in our toolkit, I call it, as growth capital to help companies scale that we are already partnering with and bringing those solutions to our customers and to the market. So that's broadly speaking how we use venture capital.
Okay. And you said growth. What stage are you typically investing?
So the companies that we work with, Xylem is really good at partnering with innovators to, once you hit that inflection point, you've found your minimum viable product, you found your product market fit, you've got your first paying customers, you really understand your pricing, your positioning, strategy, and you're looking to scale your solutions. Typically in the water sector, I would say that is a Series B or beyond, but the scales in the water sector are a little bit different than, for example, in traditional tech. So what we might think of as a Series B might be a Series A for a non-traditional water startup company.
Okay. As par for the podcast, I have so many questions. But let's come back for a moment, if we can, to just the process by which the Xylem is helping businesses draw water. What are some of the challenges that exists that Xylem helps markets overcome for purposes of getting access to water?
The way I think about it, I break it down into maybe, let's call it, four categories. You either have too much water. So you're in instances where you're having flooding and there's too much water going around that you can't manage. That is definitely an impact on businesses. It's an impact on climate. There's disasters all the time right now that you see with too much water. We just had the flood in Texas this last weekend that claimed many lives as a result of unpredicted water flooding 29 feet and upward in a matter of 2 hours, which is just unprecedented. So you've got too much water in certain instances. You have too little water in other instances. I lived many years in California and also in Israel, and you never have enough water, never have enough rainfall. So it's always, how can you get the most mileage out of that last drop and reuse water as much as possible? And then the other couple of areas are within your water sources, what is contaminated. And so there's all different kinds of pathogens, bacteria. We had, you know, scares of COVID in you know, being passed through different wastewater streams. So how do you think about making sure that your water is clean and that you can detect all of the different pathogens or microplastics or pharmaceuticals that are in your water so that you can treat them? And then the last thing I think about is just the workforce in terms of the fact that we have a very highly skilled workforce that is needed to operate water and wastewater treatment plants. That workforce is retiring out and not being replaced sufficiently. And so how do you support that knowledge transfer and the operation of those facilities to keep that critical infrastructure going? So those are the four kind of thematic areas that I think about.
And so, you know, I presume most of our listeners, when they think about water, they think about clean water. I think about pH of 7. But I presume it would be naive of me to think that industries who are relying on water have the same requirements. What can you share with us, you know, just to help us think about, like, what are the requirements when it comes to clean water, whether it's for industrial production purposes or any other industry, you know, other than coming out of the faucet that they think about for purposes at scale?
Yeah, there's a lot of different challenges. It really depends who you are. I think we in culturally in a lot of Western countries are used to just turning on your tap and clean water flows out, and you kind of take for granted where that water is coming from and all of the people and all of the operations that are behind it. It's funny, you know, I talk with my friends and family sometimes, and even though I've been telling them about working in the water sector for over 15 years now, it's still hard for them to conceive of the sheer number of people and capital that go into making sure that that water flows. And a lot of that, like I said, comes from a cultural perspective. Whereas, you know, when I lived in Israel for many, many years, that culture is completely different. Everybody knows where your water, you know, comes from, has an appreciation for what it takes for that water to come out of your tap. My husband, who's born and raised in Israel, if he hears a faucet on or if he hears dripping of water, running water unnecessarily, to him, it sounds like that nail on a chalkboard kind of, you know, nails on a chalkboard kind of sound. He can't hear it and he'll go looking for the source to turn it off. So he has a great understanding and appreciation. So it really just depends on where you're coming from in terms of your comprehension of what goes on behind the scenes. Definitely a lot of different requirements for drinking water for municipal purposes versus what happens in the industrial world, and the consequences are very different. If you have water that hasn't been properly cleaned and isn't up to standards on the municipal side, people can obviously get sick. And so that is incredibly important. On the industrial side, you have all different kinds of implications. You can imagine if you are a tech company that's powering data centers with water, or if you're a semiconductor company that is just producing chips in the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of materials an hour, if your water isn't clean, and we're talking medical grade, you know, standards of cleanliness for semiconductor production, then you're really in a tough spot. You're out millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, if your water isn't coming out. So different implications, but both very severe.
Well, yeah, you know, as I think about it, as I'm listening to you, I mean, I can imagine, you know, I'll just use someone who's making chip wafers. I can imagine that the technology is extremely, you know, precision grade, but also just requires the absence of impurities to ensure that it's working clearly. And yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense, you know, even though it's not being consumed. I would imagine that there's just, you need clean water to run your system.
It's actually the opposite, interestingly. When you have that kind of you know, purity, high level purity of water, which you can use for industrial applications, it's actually not good for you as a human being. So in a lot of instances, when you clean water, you go through a water recycling process and you clean it to that level of purity, you actually need to add minerals back into the water in order for it to be eligible for human consumption. So it's actually quite the opposite, which is interesting.
Oh, wow. I love this podcast because I'm learning something all the time. You mentioned that you've been working in water technology for 15 years, but even more broadly, if you can share with us your career progression leading up to Xylem, that'd be great.
Yeah, happy to. So I started my career actually as a civil engineer. That's what I did my undergrad degree in, and then I went on to grad school where I specialized in construction management. So went directly out into the field. I worked for some of the top ENR large general contracting firms on large infrastructure and commercial projects all over the United States. So that was a great deal of fun. So I had that boots on the ground experience working out of a trailer on construction projects. And from there, I ended up moving out to Israel for personal reasons. It's where my family's originally from. And it's hard to not get into the startup ecosystem when you're in Israel. There's a huge proliferation of startup companies and tech. So I actually was on the founding team of a couple of startup companies, both digital companies with applications for water and wastewater as a beachhead market. So the companies themselves were IoT and digital twin technologies, but all water and wastewater as our beachhead markets. And so that's how I actually got into the water space, which is connected to civil engineering. Civil engineering is a really broad space that includes water. And so that's how I got into the water and wastewater space. I built those companies for over 10 years, and I had worked with a lot of big corporates during that time, and thought that if I ever had the opportunity to actually build one of those innovation and venture groups in a large corporate, that that would be something I personally would love to do, because there's really an unlock for commercializing new technologies to market and bridging between kind of tech and more conservative or industries, if you will. Because as a startup, you are focused on your one product, your one solution, your one technology. It's your silver bullet. Like, that's what you're trying to bring to the marketplace to solve a particular challenge. And yet these large companies are the channel to market. It's a global company. There's thousands of salespeople, as an example. And so if you could unlock that partnership capability between the startup and the large company, you're bringing dozens, if not more, new technologies to market at a time. So that for me was something that I really was interested in doing. And I am very fortunate, had the opportunity to join Xylem. Was not interested in just yet doing my third startup in a row. And so went the direction of starting this innovation and venture group within Xylem since 2021. So it's been just over 4 years now. And it's been a fantastic ride so far.
Fantastic. And so how does what's the interaction between the lab and the corporation? We've gotten a handful of different flavors, but generally it's either on balance sheet, off balance sheet, or hey, we're gonna require you to really dial into our business managers to ensure that any investments are aligned with the general corporate structure versus hey, we'd like you to just, play some bets, even if they're wild card.
So yeah, absolutely. Generally, when you're looking at corporate venture capital or CVCs, you're looking at a strategic or a financially based CVC. I would say that Xylem CVC is very much on the strategic side of things. What we're looking to do is support all of our P&Ls and all of our businesses across the company to grow from a top line perspective by adding new innovations from a technology or a process or a business model perspective into the portfolio of solutions that we can bring to our end markets that we serve. And so we're constantly scouting for the best of the best that we're going to be able to add to our portfolio through partnership. And so when we think about venture, I think about venture from two perspectives. The first is that top of the funnel. So we are also a fund of funds. We operate as a limited partner in a number of different venture capital groups that we've invested in to date. And we look at those partners of ours as instrumental for our deal flow, for our due diligence, for market intelligence to help with that top of funnel perspective. And then once we qualify the partners that we look at and we are partnered with them, that could take the shape of licensing, reselling, private labeling, joint venture. It could be, in the pipeline for M&A. And so we look at direct equity investing as just another tool in that toolkit for how we can closely commercially partner and support that particular company in scaling. So that's the lens that we look at from our CVC perspective.
And so for founders who are interested in having Xylem as an investor in their company, how does the interaction normally evolve over time?
Reaching out to our tech scouting team, definitely. And we take all forms of outreach. We are constantly on LinkedIn. People email us, they call us, whatever it is. And one of the things that I actually brought with me from my founder experience is 100% response rate. So even if the answer is a no, we respond to everybody. Might not be immediately. It's not a chat bot. We are human beings. And so we actually do take the time to respond physically. And so it might be a few weeks, but we respond to everyone. We don't invest in companies that we have not interacted with and that we are not partnering with. So the best way, again, is just to get in touch with the team, make sure that we've got you in our Rolodex, our list of companies. And when we do this annual vetting of companies that we might be interested in partnering with, then you're there and we know about your company. We've had a conversation. We know if you might be a good fit given the themes that we're looking at for the year. And then we actually run an invite-only partnerships program on an annual basis. We invite around 50 companies a year to apply. Of those 50, we have maybe 11 to 13 companies that we further evaluate through this pretty intensive due diligence process. And we end up in partnership with maybe a handful of companies on an annual basis. And then those are generally the ones that are prime candidates for venture investing.
How long does the evaluation last?
The evaluation process can be around 6 to 9 months. It is a partnerships program. So what that looks like, we've actually developed out the first 2, 3 months are what I call a corporate crash course or corporate boot camp, where we're getting to know your company. It's an investment of a couple of hours a week. And we put on a series of courses to help founders understand the perspective of a corporate. So we put on all kinds of seminars from our channel management, how to navigate the company, how we think about things from an intellectual property perspective, product market fit, pricing, positioning. We really want founders, once they're engaged with our internal business units, to understand how the company is structured, the terminology that we use, all those different elements, so that when you're talking to a product manager, an R&D leader, a P&L president, you understand what they're metricized by and how they operate and what language they're using, so you can talk to them in that language, the same that you would as a founder to a customer or to an investor. But not a lot of founders have that experience with corporate employees. And so we put on that initial crash course to help them communicate with the internal, with our internal stakeholders. And then the second half of the program is designing out what we call a proof of value, which could take the shape of a pilot or another kind of customer interaction or doing a market study, whatever questions our decision makers inside the company need answered, we help them diligence that through that proof of value, whatever that looks like. So we don't do a pilot just to say we did a pilot. We're assuming that the technology works. We will check with your references, but we do take on some kind of project engagement evaluation that answers the due diligence questions that are needed in order to make a decision on partnership.
Well, there may be many corporate VCs who run similar programs, but if there are, I haven't heard about them. I would love if you can give us a little bit more insight. What was the genesis behind the idea, and what's your experience been?
Yeah, I think, sometimes because we call it our partnerships accelerator, people think of the word accelerator in the innovation ecosystem and they think about it as this kind of just few months of getting introductions to customers or to investors. And it's what I call, in a lot of instances, innovation theater. That isn't what we're doing at Xylem. What we're doing, it's more of a partnerships program where we've just created a really robust timeline due diligence process, governance process for doing due diligence on partnership with a company. And so what we're doing is certainly we're testing out the technology, making sure that it works in the applications that the founders say that it works, where it provides value. We're also getting customer and market feedback to make sure that the market is actually seeing the value in it and getting that direct customer response. And then we're also testing out the partnership, because at the end of the day, technology is lovely, but the people who make partnerships work and the people who are able to scale it are just that, they're people. So we have to check that it's a good partnership between the parent company and between the startup company, that it's going to be something that we can work together through good times and also through challenging times in order to scale, So It's really more of a partnerships program. There isn't a particular rule that says that we have to conduct that on an annual basis, but I do find, and the reason that we structured it that way is because it helps. Just everyone else has a ton going on. All of our P&L leaders, all of our divisions, all of our segments, they've got to meet the quarter. We're a publicly traded company. They've got to meet their quarterly requirements, their annual requirements. And then suddenly they have all of this investigation that they're doing of startups and new tech, which maybe the time horizon is 1 to 3 years. Maybe it's longer than that. And so to keep their focus on the longer term opportunities, having that annual cadence where they know, oh, you know, it's December, it's time to pick the companies for next year. Oh, okay, it's June, it's time to make decisions about the companies for this year. And having that all structured for them is really, really helpful. Yeah. So not a must, but it has proven really helpful.
Well, I was gonna say credit to you, it's brilliant. And it makes a lot of sense. And I also think it probably does it goes a long way to just ensuring there's alignment, given the commitment that the founders have to put forth. So, you know, I'd be curious, any recent portfolio companies come to mind or that you can share with us that really have Xylem excited about?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple that I'll mention. One that I'm really excited about that we have a partnership with is called Transcend. They're an artificial intelligence-based platform that designs wastewater treatment plants basically overnight. So if you will, and you're thinking about, I don't know how often you think about designing wastewater treatment plants, but we think about that all the time. Well, that was like... So, but when you're designing a plant, you've got all of these requirements in terms of the water, the incoming water quality, the outgoing output, the lay down area that you have, all of the regulations and requirements of the space that you're in. And there's a million different options in terms of how you can design that plant. There's no one right way. And it might take months for engineers to think about the top candidates in terms of what your design drawings might look like. And instead, here you've got this tool that is automated, and overnight it can spit out, hey, given all the parameters that you gave us as an input, here's your half dozen top candidates for you to consider. And oh, by the way, here's also the top equipment and instrumentation that might be really helpful in order to achieve your desired outcomes. So this AI based software platform is one that I'm particularly excited about. It'll enable us to work with our customers to get to faster outcomes. So that's one of them. And then the other one is a company called Molier, which is a nanobubble pretreatment technology. They're the world leader in nanobubble pretreatment, and that enables in your wastewater treatment processes to lower your energy requirements, to lower your chemical inputs, and so saves a lot of money, and also enables you to use less chemicals in your water, which is a great thing.
Wow. And so what, you know, roughly what proportion of portfolio companies are pure software versus some hard tech component?
It's a good question. I would say right now it's probably around 50-50 in terms of hardware software. But there's always a hardware component that's required. Even if it's a pure software company, there is some element of hardware that's needed as an input for your data collection or whatever that looks like. So it's rarely just the software layer, but probably about 50-50 right now.
You know, I was anticipating 80-20 hardware software.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating. And so with that, you know, obviously AI, you know, it's a reoccurring theme on the podcast. I love your perspective.
I can't imagine that being the case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and, well, the crazy thing is, I mean, we could argue that, you know, we're probably still in the first inning, of things to come. And so, you know, with that, I'd love just to know, like, how are you thinking about it right now? Do you feel like you're in a position where you need to make bets, or, you know, you're starting to see some really mature use cases that your confidence is high that, hey, this is just a great direction for us to go right now?
Yeah, I mean, when you say artificial intelligence, I think about it a little bit along the lines of how we were using the term digital previously, where the AI or digital in and of itself isn't a thing. It is a tool that you use to achieve a particular outcome. So as we're thinking about artificial intelligence, there's a huge push at the company right now to leverage artificial intelligence internally to support operations, to upskill our workforce, you know, just to make our tasks more efficient and productive. So using it as a tool internally is definitely somewhere where we're trying to focus a lot of our time and effort. And then there's AI that you can embed into your products and solutions to support your customers. And one particular use case that I'm really excited about is for knowledge transfer and for training purposes, because you know, while Xylem and any large company has its own direct sales force, you also have channel partners, then you also have end users that are using your actual technology that's deployed in the field. And like I mentioned, one of the four areas that I'm concerned about or that I think about is about that workforce and retiring workforce and the level of specialty that you need in such complicated industrial operations. So the opportunity to have artificial intelligence to support training, customer service, support, knowledge transfer of people that you know might be leaving the industry at some point, to me is a particular area that I'm really excited and about and focused on.
Well, and just this retiring workforce, is there you know a general academic profile? Are they generally undergrads, PhDs, or engineers? How should we think about them?
Yeah, when we talk about that in the water sector, we predominantly mean that operators, so people who are in the field who know how to use the actual hardware. So we were talking about the hardware software split. So the people who actually know how to use the hardware. And just to give an example, you know, I've worked for tech companies or with tech companies for a long time. I had those startups that I mentioned. And one cultural thing that I really like to do at both startups, in fact, was I would ask somebody from sales or from operations to come and to pitch what the company was doing in a minute or less. And then I would ask somebody from our R&D or our software team to pitch what the company was doing in a minute or less. And you would get these two totally different pitches that sounded like you were talking about completely different companies and technologies altogether because their perspectives were so different. And the reason that I did that is I wanted to promote this level of understanding and respect for what people are actually doing out in the field, because whereas you know, sometimes I would get a little bit of a snarky commentary from our software engineers about capabilities of, you know, folks out operating, you know, operating plants. I would say, you know, we work with a lot of desalination facilities or reverse osmosis facilities as an example. And you go out there and you're operating, you know, pressure vessel under up to 1,000 pounds per square inch or 1,000 PSI. That's essentially like a pipe bomb. It's really dangerous work. And it's also very important work. And so those are the types of folks that have that very specialized skill set and knowledge that we need in order to continue to have safe operations of our water and wastewater treatment systems, but to also ensure this continuous and safe supply of water at the same time.
You know, I think we talked, you mentioned it earlier, and it's just, you know, you have this entire infrastructure that I think you have many countries, the US included, are just not thinking about. And yeah, you know, also complement that with conversations around how is AI going to displace people. You know, this is encouraging. You know, I think as we start to delve deeper, you know, there's still plenty of opportunity for people to consider, hey, you know, someone has to learn the new AI tech. Someone still has to run the plan. And so, you know, just getting the word out there to make sure that these professional opportunities exist is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sivan, before we wrap up, have a couple of go-to questions I really enjoy asking. One of them is retrospective. And so if you have an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
Ooh, let's see. I think, you know, one of the things I say to people and that are earlier in career, I do a lot of mentorship. I also have a lot of mentors myself. I just can't overemphasize the importance of being kind. That's one thing that I talk about quite a bit. And the reason is just, you know, at the end of the day, like we're all human beings, we're all people. I actually remind a lot of the startups that we work with as well that corporate employees are also individuals with families, and this is their job. And you can't just say the name of the company as if it's an entity. It's a, you know, company that is incorporated somewhere in a state on a piece of paper. Like the human beings are what make it into the corporation. And so it's really important just to treat people as such, and nobody comes to work to be disrespected or treated poorly. And so just the importance of being kind. And also, it's just a long life and a long career in a small community. Water, for example, is global, but also very local. And you get to know each other over the years. So I can't overstate the importance of being kind.
I love it. I mean, on so many levels. And yeah, you know, I guess sometimes I default to thinking that everyone's going to be courteous and respectful, and you know that sometimes people are distressed or there's a lot going on, and it's easier to deviate. But I couldn't agree more. Definitely, the world needs a lot more patience and understanding. That's for sure. Last question. So more recently, I've enjoyed asking our guests or giving them an opportunity just to call out anyone in their personal or professional life who's had a meaningful impact on their career that you'd like to give a shout out to.
Oh, that's also a good one. I would probably give a shout out to Patrick Decker. He was the former CEO of Xylem. And he, under his tutelage, we established our corporate innovation and venture arm. And he was forward thinking in enabling us to do that, which has gotten us to where we are today. Very inspirational person, and definitely owe him a lot from a personal and professional perspective.
Fantastic. Yeah, the world definitely needs more Patricks who are willing to push innovation for it. That's great.
Yeah.
Love
yeah.
it. Well, with that, Sivan, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and sharing your perspective with our audience. If there's anyone who'd like to learn more about Xylem or get a hold of you, how can they find you?
I am on LinkedIn, Sivan Sidney Zamir. Reach out to me. I mentioned that we have 100% response rate from the team. That includes from myself. So feel free to reach out anytime. And I just really appreciate you running this podcast, inviting me to join, the opportunity to get to know each other. Looking forward to this just being the beginning of the relationship.
Likewise, again, Sivan, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Sivan Zamir. Sivan, again, is the Vice President, Enterprise, Innovation, and Venture at Xylem. This has been another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez. Thank you for joining us. Take care.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you'd like to know more, go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.